Selection Committee, I welcome you with open arms.
Is that so? How late do you stay open?
You don't understand. I could have had class. I could have been a contender. I could have been somebody.
You want answers?
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth. You can't handle the truth.
I hope they are watching. They'll see. They'll see and they'll know. And they'll say, she wouldn't even harm a fly.
What's up, everybody? You're listening to NoCo Cinema here on WGN Plus. We are your guide to cinema here in the city of Chicago. I am Tom Hush.
And I am Connor Cornelius.
And we are so excited to be back with you for another week of Chicago Film Conversation. We're a couple weeks removed from a movie that people have been talking about to death. And I'm sure that many people listening to this might be tired of it. But Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, the ninth film from
Hollywood legend
Quentin Tarantino, making a big splash. I will say a lot of reports are saying it's his biggest opening. It's his biggest opening unadjusted for inflation. But still, in terms of dollar amount unadjusted, it's his biggest opening. It's been getting lots of rave reviews, but also some very scathing reviews from very specific critics. I mean, he's no stranger to that. He has always been a controversial filmmaker.
It, really.
I mean, in a sense, if anybody's ever seen him go on like a late night show, like before the premiere, right before the premiere, he went on like Jimmy Kimmel and did an interview. And, you know, if you've ever watched him give an interview, it's kind of excruciating in a way.
Yeah.
Let me get this out of the way. I'm a big fan of Quentin Tarantino.
Would you still say that he's like one of your favorite, if not your favorite filmmaker?
I would say so. His movies, I think, hold a very special place in my heart. And, I think it's some of the best stuff to come out of the 90s, especially, and some really great stuff in the 2000s as well.
And he's a great resource too, honestly, man. Like,
yeah,
just such a great gateway to all of these other different types of, like, he grew up loving blaxploitation films and, you know, kung fu movies and everything. And just if you watch any of his movies, and you'll be able to see these elements in earlier iterations of the things that he was influenced by.
Right. And it'll lead you back to some of these original sources and get you into a lot of stuff that you might not have ever really seen or considered to be great cinema. And it really, he's a wellspring of film knowledge.
And let's just not kid ourselves here. If you want to talk about movies, and if you consider yourself somebody that likes movies, odds are Quentin Tarantino is on your radar or has popped up in conversation about the film. He's pretty much inextricable from the contemporary film discussion.
Right, which to some people, it's to much people's chagrin, because obviously over the last few years, his legacy has been super complicated because of his very close working relationship with Harvey Weinstein. There was a piece in the New York Times from Uma Thurman, or rather interviewing Uma Thurman, talking about his behavior on set and the way that he treats his actors, specifically calling into question the way that he treats women on set and his proclivities towards women. And even before that, like calling into question his use of violence, which is something that people still to this day have an issue with.
Right.
So he has always been a controversial figure. I recognize that, and I'm not saying that he is a perfect person. I really am a fan of his movies. I really find his cinema to be invigorating and fascinating, and especially when he came onto the scene as being part of this generation of filmmakers like P.T. Anderson and Steven Soderbergh. He was a fresh new voice in independent cinema, and he was making movies that people, that just shocked people and were a shot in the arm for a lot of cinema goers. So that all being said, we're now on his ninth feature. Yep. According to him, his penultimate feature. He plans on making one more. According to him, he says he wants to maybe write plays, maybe produce, maybe do
maybe
other
write
things,
some books.
Maybe write some books. But he says that he's given all that he can to cinema in terms of being a director. So
minus one, right? He's making one more.
Yeah, minus one. So it's really interesting to look at this feature in that context. And I'm going to throw this out here right now. If you haven't seen this movie yet, just skip ahead.
Yeah.
Got a great interview coming up a little bit later in the show. We're going to talk about this, all the plot elements. It's been out for a while now. You know, if you don't want to hear about it in this much detail, you know, maybe fast forward to a little bit later. We're going to be talking about this full blown spoilers, what have you, although, you know, I hate that spoiler.
And
shit. Like, who
true,
cares?
Right. I mean, we're going to be talking about the movie. It just goes without saying.
It just goes without saying.
I'm kind of excited because I think we're going to have our first argument in like 70 episodes or something.
Yeah.
Not less than that. But
yeah. No, I mean, I think we've disagreed on things, but I think as we've been kind of like talking about this here and there before now, I think we realized that there are some sticking points to this, that to this movie that that we both have that are really just not in conjunction with one another, which I'm glad. It's exciting to
not see eye to eye.
Yeah, not see eye to eye. I think there's something to be said about that. So Connor, tell me what you thought about Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
I thought it was okay. I thought it was an entertaining movie. That frankly is, and I've only seen it one time, and I will say that my experience in the theater was slightly frustrating, and we can get into that in a little bit if it's relevant. But at the end of the day, I've really found some things that I think are pretty problematic that I have been having trouble coming to terms with and trouble justifying, especially given my own love for his movies. And I've really enjoyed everything that he's come out with, and I think that he is a champion for film, and I think that he is really, you know, he will go to bat for it. And so for him to be such a big part of my life growing up and everything, to watch this movie and to feel the things that I did, is troublesome.
But, okay.
Tom, what did you think about the movie?
Okay. I think it is great. I thought it was a really great movie. I know I'm not alone in this. I think I'm not a huge believer in consensus, but there seems to be a consensus that this is a really great movie. And I found it to be a fascinating rumination on getting older, becoming irrelevant, and what happens when the things that you're interested in are no longer interesting to other people. And as a work of sort of historical revisionism, I think it gives a different take on the one of the most notorious crimes of the 20th century in America, the Manson murder. This Manson murder, specifically Sharon Tate. You know, they don't go into LaBianca, which happened literally, I want to say, the day after, if I'm not mistaken. The Manson family killed a couple in Hollywood, but this is specifically dealing with the more infamous of the two, which is the murder of Sharon Tate, J. Sebring, Abigail Folger, and
heirs to the Folger fortune.
Heirs to the Folger fortune. And one of Roman Polanski's friends, who unfortunately, I apologize, I don't remember his name. You know, he killed three like super rich, super well, you know, really well known
people.
Rather
said they.
Yeah.
Killed them.
They killed them. And I think there has been, I think there are conversations to have in this movie. Or rather about this movie that are important. Yeah. One of the things that I don't think needs to be conversed about is the treatment of the Manson family. I really, there was a moment on film Twitter, and let me get this out here. I think film Twitter is a silly place. I really think it is. It's this kind of, among the great voices that are out there in film Twitter talking about cinema in a really interesting way, it's just a cavalcade of people with hot takes, or seemingly hot takes, that are really just kind of weak as shit and stupid, and really just an attempt to garner attention, whether positive or negative. That's just how it is. That's the fucking internet for you. It's just takes without any sort of like backup.
And so you don't think that talking about the treatment of the Manson family is important to the discussion? Because well, I disagree.
I really don't know what there is. I don't know what there is to say. Because there was this idea that, oh wow, the Manson, those Manson people got the treatment of the Manson girls was really poor. And I'm like, really? Are we making excuses for historically? They're playing historical people. They're playing you can go on the internet and be like, Margaret Qualley was playing this Manson girl. Dakota Fanning was playing this Manson girl. What's her name from the show Girls?
Lena Dunham.
She's playing this Manson girl. So they're playing historical figures who walked into a house, killed four people, and actually five people. They don't even mention in the movie that they would have killed. There was a fifth person that was killed in a Jeep. Essentially, it was an 18-year-old kid who was killed in a Jeep who was just visiting. Killed five people with impunity and complete brutality. Granted, under the direction of a cult leader and a white supremacist, but they did it nonetheless.
Right.
And I understand there are more nuanced conversations to have about what was happening with like the cult aspect of the Manson family, and were they in the right state of mind? Could they plead insanity? Blah blah blah. I get that, but what this movie is to me, that portion of the movie, which is almost entirely separate in a way from the rest of what's going on, that's
but it
fascinating.
Rings out as his statement.
I mean, his statement is that Sharon Tate was killed in cold blood. We're going to allow Sharon Tate to live and just go through a normal day, sure, being breezy, sunny Sharon Tate, sure, and the Mansons are going to be stopped. Now, the level of brutality, if that is uncomfortable with you, stop watching Quentin Tarantino movies, because it is no more or less brutal, I really think, than anything he's ever done to anyone else in a lot of his movies. We're talking about...
Can I respond to that?
Yes.
Okay. I generally agree. Yeah. I think that Quentin Tarantino throughout all of his movies has shown an obsession of killing people who he deems deserving of death.
Yeah. Revenge is more or less like that's the guiding goal. Principle through almost all of his cinema.
Right. And for the most part, the people that he's dealing with are just plain bad people that are doing things of their own volition. It's Reservoir Dogs. You have the gangsters. It's Pulp Fiction. And, you know, they are working for, you know, they are doing things and they have a choice of doing it. You know, Jackie Brown, they want to steal the money. And Samuel L. Jackson wants to kill people. You have Kill Bill, where Bill wants to kill the unnamed character because, you know...
Well, she does have a name.
Well, she does have a name, but...
The Bride.
People haven't seen it. The Bride. You know, Kill Bill 1 and 2. Bill does these horrible atrocities to them, and they literally say in that movie that she deserves to die, and so do they, and so do the other assassins in the movie. Mm-hmm. The Hateful Eight. You know, these terrible people on the countryside, slave owners in Django Unchained, Nazis in Inglourious Basterds, these people. And I would say that with anything, there's a spectrum. You know, certain people I am okay with watching get killed because it does feel it satiates this carnal side of me. But when I really stop to consider it, and frankly, I've watched all of his movies with, you know, I've enjoyed it. I enjoyed watching, you know, Hitler get killed because I think that he deserves it. I enjoyed watching slave owners get killed because I think that they deserved it. But when it was played, I think that, and we can really like skate over the treatment of the Manson family in general. I do want to talk about it for a little bit more, but I think my main issue with the film is the way that Quentin Tarantino employs things for laughs. And especially in this movie, I find it the most bothersome because I don't think that he is the best person to make a statement about what these people deserved, what the Manson family deserved. What they did was terrible, and I'm not going to dispute that whatsoever. And the idea of killing off the Manson family at the end of the movie is a nice revision, because it would have let Sharon Tate continue to live. And I'm not in any way saying that that's a bad thing. But for me, when I stop to think about it, and I've always been staunchly against the death penalty, to watch the level of brutality and to be surrounded by all of these people in this audience laughing and watching these people get torn up by dogs, it was not a thing where, and when I go to the movie theater, I want to be around people. I want to enjoy the experience in a group. And I could not have felt any less like connected to humanity when I was watching this, because in my mind, yes, these people did a terrible thing, but it's my belief that they were brainwashed by this disgusting mm-hmm. cult leader, much like other people in other cults have been brainwashed. Like, I would never say that the people who died in Jonestown that drank the Kool-Aid deserved to have that happen to them. You know, the level of brutality in that movie went too far for me, and we can stop it there. And that I just wanted to get my point out because I didn't think that it was being heard. But let's talk about the other aspects of the movie that I guess I take umbrage with.
So I wanted to get your read on the main meat of the movie, which is Rick Dalton and Cliff Booth. And what they're doing and what their journey is.
See, when I said that I thought the movie was entertaining, that's the shit. That's the fucking best part of the whole movie, in my opinion. Just watching Brad Pitt and Leonardo DiCaprio be fucking charming as hell on screen, and watching Leonardo DiCaprio be basically unconvincing as this super falling star actor, when I couldn't help but see, you know, because they do a lot of film within a film in the movie, and then just general like being around on film sets. So I had a hard time suspending my disbelief in this movie, because it was just like, I know that's Leonardo DiCaprio, I know that's Brad Pitt. It's like the casting was just so aggressively for the biggest stars in Hollywood.
Yeah, that was something that I kind of wished, as much as I love the central performances here, and I think they're very specific, and I think they're going for a very specific thing. I don't like that Quentin is kind of turned on this. His original sort of draw was that he would take people whose careers were basically almost over and just totally reinvigorate them, like
Pam Grier,
like, and Pam Grier doesn't need any favors.
No, obviously.
I think he was just, he gets excited to take these people that he really admires. He'd be like, let me write a role for you.
John Travolta may be a better example.
John Travolta, I mean, well, yeah, John Travolta was really on the skids. Like, David Carradine. He wasn't really doing anything before Kill Bill, like, and like he was kind of like done. He had been in Kung Fu, the TV show, and like some other grindhouse stuff, but like, you know, he wasn't exactly a super working actor. You could even say in Reservoir Dogs, like Lawrence Bender, like or Lawrence Tierney.
Who is he?
Lawrence Tierney is he's Joe, right?
Oh, okay. The big
Wong.
Ones.
Wong.
Toby? Okay, we're not going to do that.
So he takes these people. I mean, now he's just kind of like throwing his weight around a little bit. He's doing kind of what, like, I think Jim Jarmusch does, what he recently did in The Dead Don't Die, which I thought was kind of tacky, which was like, hey, look, I'm Jim Jarmusch. Look how many famous people I know. I know Iggy Pop. I know Bill Murray. I know, I know, RZA.
Strange. it's like strange flex, but okay, the movie a little bit.
I honestly think that they give two fantastic performances that are really fascinating and are really representative of a specific time during the golden age of Hollywood where these people were becoming irrelevant.
Right.
Like, you know, you've got Al Pacino in there basically laying out the entire theme in your face. He's like, hey, you're getting old. They're casting you as the villain so that young dudes can beat the shit out of you. And then people will just think of you as the villain. You won't be the leading man anymore. You got to go do Italian. You got to go do spaghetti westerns.
Spaghettis. But nobody likes spaghettis. I loved that. That was a great bit, too.
Well, I think
Tarantino likes spaghettis. Do you get it?
Yeah. A lot of spaghettis are really bad. Like,
yeah,
they weren't particularly popular at times, but like, you know, it's whatever. Because when we think of spaghetti westerns, like the cultural touchstone is Sergio Leone and like fucking Good, the Bad, and the Ugly.
Right.
Which is just like, how could anybody not like Good, Bad, and the Ugly? I'm like, well, there's other spaghetti Western directors.
I'm sure
that
there
made
are a lot of people that could not like The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly.
Yeah.
Also,
those we call those people idiots. No.
Maybe the Ugly.
That's rude. But I really thought it was a fascinating movie that covers a very specific time in Hollywood that clearly Quentin has a lot of reverence for.
Could I ask you really quick, how did you feel about how he captured the setting of that movie? Both like just like with the characters and everything. And I mean, obviously he did an immaculate reconstruction of like the Cinerama and shit.
Yeah, it is. It is shocking. It is unbelievable what him and his production designer were able to do.
Yeah.
The production designer is actually someone really famous. I don't know their name off the top of my head, but they've done production design, you know, on a number of movies. And it is, you have to admire what they did here. They literally recreated 1969 Los Angeles, like, Los Angeles, in Hollywood. I can't even believe it. And
the biggest flex of all. They fucking shut down Sunset Boulevard.
Yeah,
for Tarantino's like passion movie.
I wasn't born in 1969. I wasn't there for LA in 1969. But you could feel it. Like you could feel that it was a living, breathing place. And I think you mentioned to me recently that there were people who said that they could like smell that movie.
Yeah,
like absolutely. They could like, oh man, I know what 1969 in Hollywood smelled
and
like.
And it smells like feet.
that's another thing that people I don't know for people who have already seen this movie, you know, there's a number of gratuitous feet shots.
Yeah, and I think gratuitous is a good word for it.
But the thing is that I can't tell if it's him saying, well, fuck it, you've called me out on it, like here it is. Yeah. Or if him saying like, oh, you think I have a foot fetish, yeah sure, here it is. Like I think either way it's him saying like, fuck you, yeah I know,
yeah.
Feet, like I'm Quentin Tarantino, here's some feet.
Yeah.
But you know, whatever. I really don't think if that bothers you, it bothers you. I mean, I get that.
No, I don't think it's bothersome. I mean,
there not could yet, be, and when I say you, I
right,
mean
you're just, the you. But I do think that there is a criticism to be had for what's the word? Indulgence.
It's a super indulgent movie. But I think Django Unchained was just as indulgent in
absolutely.
A lot of ways in terms of, yeah, it's like...
Every movie since Django has been incredibly indulgent, maybe even Inglourious, but I think that plays a little bit better.
Well, yeah, because luckily he had the amazing Sally Menke, God rest her soul, still editing. That was the last movie she edited for him was Inglourious Bastards, and that's a movie that moves at a... It's long, too.
Yeah, but it doesn't
Inglourious
feel
Bastard,
like long.
No, it moves at a clip that is unreal for how much is going on in that movie. It's one of the greatest film editors of all time, Sally Menke.
And my favorite of his. I can't imagine him topping it at this point, to be
yeah.
honest.
Yeah, and I think that the editing here has finally... evened out. I think his new editor, who was Sally Menke's protege, has finally found the rhythm.
Has he been doing everything since Django?
Yeah, he did Django, he did Hateful Eight, he did this.
Oof.
Okay. But you saw the progression. Django, lots of problems. Like lots of editing. He clearly
the
did not know
act and everything is
yeah, he clearly did not know
tooth.
Yeah, exactly. And part of it has to do with the fact that I'm guessing that script was probably pretty long.
Yeah.
And if it has Quentin's name on it, people will make it. Like the bidding war that happened for this movie for Sony to put this one out, Sony and Columbia.
Yeah, I can only imagine.
Was insane. Because I think this was his first one put out without the Weinstein Company.
Yeah. The Hateful Eight?
I
don't think they were on it. Were they?
That's a Weinstein picture.
Okay.
It definitely is.
Okay.
It came out in 2015. That's a Weinstein picture.
Huh.
But regardless, you know, I think the editing really finally found its rhythm here, and this is his longest movie. And it moves on. I think it moves at a pretty good clip. I think I wasn't bored.
Really?
At no point was I like, oh, this is really dragging. I feel like it's a movie that is like you go in and you're like, it just takes its time. It's just doing its thing. And you're not entirely, I think I wasn't entirely sure of what its thing was until
right.
the very end. And
right.
I was like, oh, this is that type of movie. A lot of people have, I would say very accurately paired this with Jackie Brown in terms
as a hangout
of,
movie.
As a hangout movie.
Sure.
That's the word that's a buzzword being thrown around social media and a lot of criticism is as a hangout movie. Because, I mean, when's the last time you watched Jackie Brown?
Actually like 2 days ago.
Yeah.
Fucking
there's a lot of stuff where they're just kind of like sitting.
Yeah.
and just
eating in the mall food court and walking around looking at clothes and stuff.
Yeah. And comfy. There's all the bit with like Robert De Niro, Bobby, yeah, hanging out with what's her name,
with Samuel Jackson's little blonde surfer girl.
Yeah.
I can't remember her name.
Yeah, it's there's a lot of stuff where they're just kind of like sitting around not doing anything. A
lot of smoking weed. Probably more smoking weed in that movie than any of his other
movies. I'm home, I'm high. Chris Tucker giving a 10 out of 10 performance.
Hell yeah.
But little we digress.
Walmart. Yes.
So in terms of Quentin Tarantino movies, I don't think this necessarily gets in. A lot of people, some people have really given this immense praise.
I've been
and said
seeing
like,
a lot.
And it's gotten into the top. Like people are like, yeah, this is like my top three Tarantino pictures. And
maybe my top one.
Yeah. I wouldn't put it that high for me. I still think my top are Pulp Fiction. Well, and this is the problem that I run into is like...
Now you second guess.
It's like in terms of the ones that I watch the most... It would be Pulp Fiction, Death Proof, and Kill Bill Volume 1.
Death Proof is a great pick because it's just so consumable.
Yeah.
You know, it's so... there's something about his free-form narrative storytelling style, which, you know, obviously if you're familiar with it, it spans over like different time periods and mix and matches and stuff. It can be a little bit daunting to just put on a whim. You know?
Yeah.
But Death Proof.
Death Proof is entertaining all the way through.
It's just it's the most ridiculous slasher movie I've ever seen.
But I think this is probably one of the best in terms of his post in terms of like post Sally Menke, if we're talking about Django, Hateful Eight, and this is definitely better than The Hateful Eight.
Yeah, I think it's better than The Hateful Eight.
And I think this is it's tough because there are parts of Django I like. It's just such a mess at times, though. Yeah,
I put Django above this, no hesitation, though.
I'd have to think about it. I'd really have to think about it because Django has some really great stuff going on in it, I can't, like, that's a hard movie to just put on and watch because it just,
right.
It's just... The editing is just a problem.
But
it's not the story. To me, it's not the characters. It's not the direction. It's like the editing and the lack of just like getting this movie down to its essential parts. Django could be a much leaner, meaner movie.
Sure.
And
sure.
It could possibly be in top three for me. If there had been just some more choices made to get this movie down to what are we really talking about here.
I'd maybe like to see them do the roadshow kind of thing, extended edition, like they did with The Hateful Eight, because I really think that's how you should watch that movie. If they did that with Django, that would be fucking great.
Like, if that were a series,
it is episodic already. Maybe they'll do that. I heard they're going to do that. Maybe I heard there was tell from the editor, I think. It was an interview on Hollywood Reporter about how he thinks that he's been hearing it, that there were talks with Netflix to release an extended edition of Once Upon a Time.
It makes sense.
Because he cut
to me.
Like a whole hour and 20 minutes. Just, Burt Reynolds is in it.
Well, Burt no, Reynolds? He's not. He got recast because he died before he even. Because he was going to be.
Who is it?
James Marsden was going to play Burt Reynolds.
Yeah, but they cut him out.
Yeah, they cut him out
entirely.
Well, and I think they should leave him cut out because the joke would be lost. Because originally, Burt Reynolds was going to be George Spahn. Played by Bruce Dern.
Right.
And I think the joke would be lost because the joke was going to be that here is Burt Reynolds playing George Spahn and then also Burt Reynolds but played by someone else. And I guess if they wanted to add it back, and so, I mean, it's really no harm, no foul, I suppose. But
I think it would work very well as a mini series.
I think, it could probably work as a mini series. I think it would add an interesting sort of build
to
the movie, but I also think it works fantastically as a 2.5 hour picture.
Sure. Could we get back to the things that I don't like about
it? Sorry, I apologize.
No, I appreciate it. I want to definitely paint a picture of that I have a complicated relationship after the first viewing with this movie. But the only other thing that I wanted to talk about are, and this goes in kind of in tandem with the things that I already said, about the things that he plays for laughs. And again, a big problem that I'm having with enjoying a lot of this movie is the crowd that I was around and the way that they were laughing at and let me say this, I respect that Quentin Tarantino is trying to create the reality of that setting, create the ideological and the behavioral reality of the way that the predominantly white Hollywood treated people of color and represented them in television and kind of caricaturized them. I think that that, I mean, apparently that was how it went on back then, and I'm not surprised by that at all. And I appreciate that he is going for that, like, sure, there's racism in the movie, but it is presented as realism. My only problem with it is that it's constantly played for laughs. It's cut together like laughs. Maybe that's part of the editor's fault, but it's also part of the viewer's fault if you're laughing at when a Mexican is put forth in a stupid caricature way, or if a Native American is put forth in a caricature way and you are laughing at that representation. I think that there's something that you need to examine about your relationship with these movies and what you I guess what you believe. I don't know. I couldn't believe that there were so many people that I was around that were laughing at Bruce Lee's presentation in this movie. I thought that he was very heavily caricaturized, and I know that his daughter has reached out and expressed distaste over the way that he was portrayed. And for a man, Quentin Tarantino, who owes a lot of his, you know, career, I think, to kung fu movies. I mean, I know that he's a big fan of them. I couldn't believe that he would take one of their biggest, the greatest stars of the kung fu, you know, cinema movement and reduce him to a literal punchline. It left a bad taste in my mouth.
Yeah, I understand that. And I think it would have been if Tarantino were willing to reach out to the family of Sharon Tate, he should have reached out to Bruce Lee's family, because he did reach out to Sharon Tate's family and explained what he was doing, and then they gave their seal of approval. But at the same time, you know, and I'm saying this as a fan of Bruce Lee, I think that maybe it was a joke in poor. I think the best you could say was a joke in poor taste. But the joke is like, wouldn't it be funny if someone kicked the shit out of Bruce Lee?
Right,
and presented like that, and your mileage will vary with that. We're also talking about an alternate Hollywood. We're also talking about a guy that who's an unreliable point of view in terms of the whole wife murder thing.
Right.
So this is basically Quentin Tarantino signifying on Natalie Wood's death and Robert Wagner and Christopher Walken. Like, you know all about that, right?
I do not.
So Natalie Wood died under mysterious circumstances on a boat that Robert Wagner and Christopher Walken were both on. And like, the whole thing is that, like, dude, Robert Wagner definitely killed his wife and
open
Christopher
secret in Hollywood.
Yeah, sort of. I mean, it's still technically a conspiracy. It's kind of like a conspiracy theory, if you want to call it that. But it's like Christopher Walken like helped like murder Natalie
that's
Wood.
The conspiracy theory.
Yeah, so that's so what we have here with him is he's a guy that like may or may not have killed his wife, like probably did, but he definitely lies about it.
Right.
So does it stand to reason that like he'd be lying about whether or not he kicked Bruce Lee's ass? Maybe.
Yeah. But does it matter?
Does it matter?
Because that's what we saw in the movie.
Yeah, I guess so. And it's the question of inference, you know, versus implication. I don't know. I kind of read it as like a joke, and maybe, you know, I guess it's probably in poor taste. Like, wouldn't it be funny if someone kicked Bruce Lee's ass?
Right. And you play and you put it like that, which is probably the way that Quentin Tarantino put it.
Probably thought about it, but it didn't play super well. And
for me, and I want to just also say that, you know, if just because I'm saying these things does not necessarily mean I'll feel the same way upon second viewing, because I will watch it again. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't necessarily mean that just because it's not for me that it shouldn't be for
you.
And
well,
I don't
exactly
want to say that.
Yeah.
I don't want to like be on a pedestal here.
Yeah, you're virtue signaling.
Yeah,
as the religious right, like, or as the conservatives like to call it, virtue signaling.
But let's talk about the things in the movie that were really great. And I love the way that you put it. How about how the film is a rumination on getting old and how you're interested in things that are not necessarily in the zeitgeist anymore. And then also the portrayal of Sharon Tate. My two favorite things.
Yeah, there was all this BS about how she didn't talk enough.
Right.
And I think it really is BS because to me, I get it. And I'm not saying that Quentin Tarantino is absolved of any sin when it comes to working with female women on set. That's just a fact. I know that there is shit that goes on, and I think he needs to be rightly chastised for it. I just don't think that the Sharon Tate thing is really of that ilk.
And I really, when we spoke about this initially, I really liked your response to why, because it was something that I was curious about as well. I was like, why isn't it important that she didn't get as many speaking lines as these two, like, super rich and wealthy actors? But I really enjoyed your response.
This is just him saying, like, she's just gonna go through her regular day and nothing's gonna happen to her.
Yeah, you get to hang out with Sharon Tate.
Yeah, because in real life, she goes home, she gets stabbed 16 times, she's 8 months pregnant, she gets stabbed 16 times begging for her life and for her child.
Right.
And instead what we get is Sharon Tate goes about her day, goes, sees herself in a movie. People, she gets to hear people laugh at her movie, yeah, because she's playing the klutz, and she gets to take a photo with the theater owner, and she just goes about her day, has dinner at El Coyote, and that's it.
You get to celebrate her and not the people that killed her, which is the only thing that people really know about Sharon Tate, that's what I liked most about it, was fuck those people, let's focus on her. And yeah. I appreciated that sentiment.
Well, and not to bring it back around to the brutality against the Mansons, that's the catharsis he's going for.
Right.
It is not a nuanced look at who the Mansons were. This is catharsis for maybe him, maybe for America, because it was a time that people lived in insane amounts of fear. People were literally moving out of the hills. People were going into hiding.
Right.
Because they were in Hollywood because they were so fucking afraid of what could happen to them. Like, people were running. So this is his, you know, admittedly non-nuanced take on fuck the Mansons. They don't get to take this away. They don't get to take away Sharon.
But I think in his zeal, he didn't put enough thought into it. In his zeal, he let his indulgence run away with himself on this film in a lot of ways.
Okay. That's fair.
And I will just say this. I'll again add on that it's all a lot of it is probably because of my audience that I was around. The audience that I was around. Somebody literally got up. There was this couple around us that kept explaining to the girl why things were funny in the movie. And she looked visibly uncomfortable during certain parts of the movie, which you get in certain circles with Tarantino fans, which is annoying. But I'll never forget it. They both get up. And after the movie ends, and one of them goes, I would have been so sad if Sharon Tate died. And I was just like, oh my God, get me the fuck out of here.
Yeah. No, that's gotta be like, a tough go of it. See, I had a different experience. I went to the Music Box and saw it in 70mm.
With a bunch of, you saw it on Thursday, right?
But I will say, I mean, people were cheering during the Manson scene. People were like the brutality at the very end. People were cheering.
Right.
And I was caught up in it. I was just like, yeah, dude, fucking. And, you know, because it's one of those things where, yes, this is the type of movie where it's going to appeal to your base instinct of revenge. That's just how it is. And is there a nuanced conversation or story to be told about the Mansons? Probably.
Oh, God, we'll be here all day.
Yeah. I mean, there are other movies that focus much more heavily on this. Like, you've got Mary Harron's Charlie Says. You've got the awful, 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 I want to say it's Hilary Duff, The Haunting of Sharon Tate.
No.
It's like, no. People are just like, oh man, it's so disrespectful, she didn't get to talk a lot. I'm like, what are you talking about? This is the most respectful portrayal of Sharon Tate I've ever seen. Like, are you kidding? Go watch The Haunting of Sharon Tate, where Hilary Duff plays Sharon Tate, and it's like, it's all just kind of like brutality and upon Sharon Tate. That's disrespectful.
That is disrespectful.
That's disrespectful.
Whoa, my voice went up 2 octaves.
Then. Yeah.
I got to remember that.
Like, you want to talk about what is or isn't in good taste. I'm not saying that the brutal, brutal violence at the end of Once Upon a Time in Hollywood is in good taste, but is it attempt to say, you know what, for the, you know, fuck these people.
Yeah.
and that, they got they I'm you know I you know I'm let's not get into it no. because then we're getting externally right. from the movie and I think sometimes it gets a little bit tricky.
I wanted to ask another quick question. What was your take on the kind of like male gaze from the film, because obviously the 60s were a very sexualized time, you know, characterized
it's the problem of Quentin it's the same problem of directors more than just Tarantino. You can't peg that on Tarantino.
I'm not pegging it on Tarantino, but if you're going to be respectful, it's obviously Sharon there. Tate.
I don't know. I don't know.
Every time pan up from her feet up to her ass, up to that, you know, like that's kind of what
I mean, admittedly, we're talking about she was, I guess if he's might be painting her as a little bit too much of a sex symbol, but at the same time,
she was one.
I can't really say one way or the other. I wasn't there.
Okay.
You know, if I had been, she really was not like a huge actress though. Like she wasn't a big deal.
No, she was just kind of blowing up, right?
Yeah,
or not even necessarily blowing up, but she was just new kid on the block.
Yeah. She's a hot ticket item. She's married to Roman Polanski. You know,
off Rosemary's Baby.
Yeah, he was a big deal. You know, he was a hot young director from Europe.
Where's that?
Yeah, it's where he's hiding right now. Fucking pedo.
Yeah. All right, I've said everything that I need to say.
Yeah,
why don't have the closing statement, Tom Hush.
I think Once Upon a Time in Hollywood is a great film. I think if this is it's problematic. But all of Tarantino's cinema is problematic, and if that gets in your way of your enjoyment, I think that's fine. I think that is valid, and I am not one of these people that is trying to evangelize people to be Tarantino fans, because Tarantino fans can suck. They can be some of the worst people on earth and really annoying and totally missing the point. But I think give it a shot. It's a pretty interesting portrayal of a time and a place that is slowly but surely being lost to time. As people who grew up in that time, they are dying. And this is a love letter to that time for all of its flaws and for all of its issues.